You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking about the PSI Book Club, and we will review a great book called Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. Have you already checked out the Effective Statistician Academy, the place where you can learn about all kind of different amazing things from experts in the field? We have courses with Kaspar Ruthiebach about estimands and how you can roll it out in your company, how you can learn about it. He is a really, really great speaker, an absolute expert in this field, and this is the most sought after course in the Effective Statistician Academy, at least of the old and new ones. We also have the medical affairs course in there. We have data visualization courses in there. We have a course about how you transition from SAS to R and lots of other things. So check out the Effective Statistician Academy. You'll find it directly on our homepage. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of the Effective Statistician, and today I'm super excited to talk with Mario Sieverding, who is running a book club for some time now with PSI, and we are talking about one of the books that he is currently discussing in this book. And I've been fortunate enough to be in his group for an earlier book, and he is doing a really great job in running this book club. So welcome to the show, Marius.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Thank you much for the kind introduction.
So before we get into the topic of the book, maybe you can speak a little bit about the book club and PSI and how this came about and what are the benefits of attending this book club?
Yeah, I'd love to. So we have this book club to give people from the PSI environment like an area to discuss maybe not so much technical books, but more books on personal development, on career development, and all the so-called soft skills. And we have a short list of books, and of course, everyone can suggest anything they're interested in reading or discussing. And we have select everyone in smaller groups, 5 to 6 people in each group. And so this gives everyone the opportunity to have a more like a safe space, basically, for discussing. So we want to give everyone the chance to really open up, be vulnerable, to really, because these are topics about like personal development. And of course, everyone brings a bit of their personality into that. So we want to make sure that we drop this performance mindset, so that we can actually talk about things we struggle with, things we want to improve on. And yeah, so that's why we have it for 3 to 4 months. Each group is running. We divide the book into chapters, and so we can take time to really discuss each chapter and work on maybe topics that are discussed there. And yeah, so it gives really opportunity to network, to get to know people from the industry, people from other companies, other departments. And yeah, so far our feedback has been really good. People come back once they're in, people tend to come back because they really enjoy it. And so yeah, I can only recommend going to the website of PSI, look us up, and yeah, join the book club.
Yeah, and we'll definitely put a link to the book club into the show notes so that you can easily find it there. So let's talk about the current book. And what is it?
Yeah, we're currently reading Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. And yeah, I always say it's a bit misleading, the title, because yeah, it is a leadership book, but I think it is not your usual leadership books, because she emphasizes more the importance of vulnerability, courage, and empathy in leadership, which is, I think, not really talked about in conditional leadership models. And so Brown said these qualities are really essential for building trust and creating like really meaningful connection with others, with your team, which, yeah, are critical for effective leadership. But this is something which is more personal development than it is just management tools. And I think what you can get out of that is really being a person that people want to follow And I think that is something which doesn't necessarily have to be someone in a leadership position. Even if you're junior, you can start working on yourself and try to be like, be a person that, yeah, you want to be a person that people really like to follow and really like to listen to.
Yeah, I think it's about persuasion, influence, and not so much about your title, leadership. Yeah, but leadership has nothing to do with positions. You can be a great leader without having any title.
Yeah.
I really love Brené Brown. If you never have heard about her, she's one of the most famous, I think, psychologists of our time. She has a TED Talk that is one of the most downloaded TED Talks of all time. She had a show on Netflix, this topic, and has her own podcast as well that you can check out. And there's a sought out keynote speaker and these kind of things. She's really at the top of this globally. And yeah, you can learn quite a lot from her. From a background, she is a qualitative psychologist. So she is also a professor in that regard. So she comes really with a scientific approach here. This is not just some ladies that had an idea and kind of put it out in the world, which is also useful. She backs it up with tons of research. And so that makes it especially applicable, I think, also to us.
Yeah.
You already mentioned one of her key concepts, vulnerability. I'm speaking about this very regularly also in my leadership program. It's one of these key things that you need to become a really good influential person. What does vulnerability mean actually here?
Yeah, I think really this is interesting. And because these are like some things she has really put to the center of her work, vulnerability and shame, which I think before her, no one has mentioned these words in terms of leadership concept and in terms of like professional management. And so that's why I think like she is really, and I love what you mentioned, that she backs it up with science, because yeah, some people have great ideas and it's great to make a concept book out of that. But she mentions how she comes to those conclusions, and this gives them a bit more weight. But I digress. Back topics. What is vulnerability? So vulnerability is being open and honest about your fears and insecurities, and be authentic when you show up as a leader. And I think there's a great quote she said, the courage to be vulnerable is not about winning or losing. It's about the courage to show up when you can't predict or control the outcome.
Yep.
And I think that when I read that in the beginning of the book, that hit so close home. I said, that's exactly the point. That's really being courageous means really just putting yourself out there and just do your best, even if you can't, you don't know what's going to be the outcome. And if you can control the outcome, you haven't really put yourself forward enough. And I think being vulnerable is when you do that, be true to what you feel, but with boundaries. And I think that there's a whole lot of concepts behind that, how it can be vulnerable, what should not be vulnerability, and like where you have to draw the line to be an effective leader, and what you can, like, what you should put out there.
Can you give an example of where you yourself have felt this vulnerability and moved into this space of being vulnerable?
Yeah, well, I definitely feel, and this is why I love this book so much, kind of, it reflects a lot of concepts that I now in retrospect see that these have shaped kind of who I am as a professional person and as a private person. Is whenever you're faced with something that makes you panic, like in work environment, somewhere, I don't know, CEO asks you, can you do a presentation? And you immediately go in shock. Oh my God, I'm so afraid of that, because it's so much out of your comfort zone. And in past, when I was younger, there was the moment when I taught myself out of these kind of things. Oh no, sorry, I don't have time. I can do that. There's someone else who can do that better. And because we are driven by fear and by shame, by I'm not good enough. I'm not the right person to do that. And I have really changed. And I give myself 3 seconds to actually think about that, to really assess, is this right? And if I can come up with a really good explanation to not do that, I say yes. Because if you take time, you will find a reason to talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
You will always find a reason. It can be ridiculous, but you find a reason and you're convinced that it's a good reason. But it's fear and shame that drives these kind of like thoughts, and just saying yes and have the courage to just go through with it. And this mindset has really shaped who I am and how I perform as a professional. And then now reading that book, it really made me feel emotional because I realized, yes, that's something which is at the center of, how I perform. And I think I feel this is like being vulnerable because I'm like facing my fears. And if I do these things, I try to be authentic as a person, try to be true to who I am with my values. But, and I think this is, or maybe we can get to the later in the podcast, like this is setting boundaries is tied to being vulnerable because it's not about getting in a meeting and drop all your emotions on people in your team. That's not vulnerability. It's still like showing I'm a human, I have feelings, I'm here with you, but you shouldn't drop your feelings on your teammates. You should have clear boundaries about what is appropriate to share and whatnot.
Yeah. I think there's a common misperception about vulnerability is a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
I think it's the other way around. It's a sign of strength.
Yeah.
A typical thing where you show vulnerability is if you, for example, ask for help.
Yes.
I haven't done this before. I have very little knowledge. I've looked into it and I think I could benefit from some help.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a really good point that she also backs up with science. She has all this research where she asks like the top CEOs of all the companies that she has worked with, and you have all these questionnaires. And she said the one thing that top managers put forward and how they identify their people they trust is people who ask for help. Because it shows you know your boundaries, you know what you cannot do, and you're brave enough to openly admit it and ask for help. And if I know someone will ask for help, I know they will come to me if the product might fail, if they have with timelines, they are not afraid to stand up and say something isn't working. And this is like really asking for help is being vulnerable, putting yourself out there.
Yep, exactly. I just had this the other day in one of the masterminds of the leadership program where we talked about exactly this topic. The person was asking some programmers and some colleagues to validate some stuff, and she didn't really get a response. And afterwards, she found out some of these things didn't went as planned, but not really asked for help. Raised, I don't know exactly what to do here. Yeah. What exactly do you expect of me?
Yeah.
Asking for clarity. I haven't completely understood this. Yeah. Could you explain that in more detail? Could you show what exactly are your goals? This is vulnerability as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the same experience in the past. I had a different country, a different company, had someone junior join, and I was mentoring him. And whenever we talked about anything, it was like, oh yeah, no problem. Yeah, I absolutely know how to do that. No problem. And in the end, like to the feedback loop over time, you realize stuff is not working out. People are complaining about the quality of work. And every time I checked in, I was like, oh, yeah, but I know absolutely how to do that. It's no problem. And I was like, I should be the person you trust. Like I'm trying to mentor you in joining this company. Please be open about what you cannot do. And yeah, this is just, you start to lose trust in people if you do not have the feeling you get a really honest and clear feedback about what they're going to do.
That is actually another interesting topic, trust and vulnerability. Mm. Can you be only vulnerable with people that you absolutely trust?
Ooh, yeah, good question. I think there was a quote which I remember how she put that. A trust can be, all right, yeah, choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's action. And I think that's a great definition because you put something out there and you risk someone else like values it or like, you put yourself out there. And this is like trusting someone. And I think she has a great framework for how trust works and how you can build trust. And it's definitely something you have to build. And she has a framework for setting boundaries, being reliable, being accountable to over time build trust. Because, I think it's really hard to be vulnerable if you don't trust people. Because you have to set very clear boundaries. So I think it could be possible, but it's a really good point.
I think it is in the essence of vulnerability that you may not completely trust the other person. If you would trust the other person completely, you would be in a safe space.
Mm.
It wouldn't be courageous. It wouldn't be, you would know that that the outcome would be good, that you would get rejection or whatever. You will get understanding.
Yeah.
It is when you don't trust the other person. And basically this vulnerability is consciously trusting forward. So you decide, okay, I will step outside my comfort zone. I don't yet trust you completely. Nevertheless, I'll ask for help. I'll provide feedback. I will do this presentation, whatsoever. Yeah. The interesting thing there is also, do you trust yourself in doing it?
Yeah, I think that's probably even more difficult than trusting someone else. We know all our insecurities. We know everything about us. But you probably, it's probably really about acting together with people you don't have 100% trust. And then I think she also talks about having these values so that you tie your action to your values. So if you, whatever you do, you frame it through the lens of one of your values. If my value is family, I'm like, yeah, I'm showing up for work because I want to provide for my family. These kind of things, like I know why I'm doing it. So if I know why I'm doing it, I'm like really set in my intentions, in my values and who I am. It's okay if other people I don't trust judge me because I stand behind what I do because I'm backed up by my own values. And so that's like probably where I can be like, it's okay if I don't trust people because I know what I do reflects who I am.
I think this is also a great way to be more courageous if you know why you're doing it. And these whys are your values. Simon Sinek has this great book about start with why. Not what you do, not how you do it, but why are you doing it? And if you share this why, it's also much easier for people to connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you share, I need to stop working now because I need to take care of my sick son or because family is important for me, things like that, people will much easier understand your why behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's also, I keep on quoting the book, but there's like hundreds of quote-worthy sentences in this book. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about connecting to the human. I think that ties back to the beginning in the introduction. She mentions how she came to this research, like having a big talk about with CEO-level people and being really afraid. And someone told her, it's just people. And this is a sentence really stuck with me, like in so many different moments and situations where I think, remember, these are all people. I mean, so people who want to connect. So the personal layer of our interaction, of our professional interaction is as important as the technical one because we talk to people. It's their emotions. It's our emotions. These are sit always at the table. If we're not aware of that, we cannot be good technical leader because it's people all the time.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, is very important thought and very valuable.
It also touches on this point that you can't just ignore emotions. You need to much more kind of leverage them, build on them. This way you can connect with people. Everybody will remember you, how you made someone feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is, I don't get the exact quote at the moment, but that's the essence of it. If you are giving a training, and you have people, gives this people this aha effect, this kind of, oh, now I understand it, this kind of heureka effect. That's a very positive feeling. And people will remember that. Maybe much more than what a p-value is.
Yeah, we connect over those experiences. And yeah. I think there's about not ignoring the emotions part, which I just really love. And I mentioned at the beginning, this book is not management methods and et cetera and like time management. But there are some things in there which are really more hands-on. And there's one thing about feedback, because that's what we try to give feedback and in like our like companies, it's try to be objective and they like values who have to be measurable. But in the end, it's two people sitting across from each other. And it's to talk about things which maybe if someone not lives up to expectation, this is something which makes you feel in a certain way. And we cannot ignore that. And I think this is ignored in feedback. And she has a great part about giving feedback. And I think giving feedback is something where we have SOPs in our companies. We have guidelines, et cetera. But the most part depends on receiving feedback. Mm-hmm. And I haven't yet seen a training on receiving feedback. Because she mentions not everyone who gives feedback is trained in giving feedback. So you might be in a position where someone gives feedback to you who isn't actually trained in that. Maybe, or he's trained, but is not trained as, it's not as good about like respecting your emotions. How to deal with someone not maliciously, but maybe by lack of training, ignores your emotions and makes you feel in a certain way. And that was an epiphany. I was like, no one has ever talked to me about receiving feedback in a way which kind of like, how does someone, how do you deal with that? I love that. So this is where we can't ignore the feeling. We can't ignore the feeling of someone gives feedback, the feeling of someone receives feedback. These things matter so much more, as maybe not more, but as much as what we're saying.
Actually, feedback, especially the constructive feedback, where you want to change a behavior, not where you want to support a behavior. This very often leads to uncomfortable discussions. And most people don't like giving this kind of feedback.
It's a tough conversation.
It's a tough conversation. Vulnerability helps you to get into this tough conversation and be there and stay in the, how did she call it, awkwardness? Yeah. And just stay in there. Don't try to run away from it. That is also very important if you start with why. If you say at the beginning of your feedback, may I give you feedback because I want you to succeed? That's my why. Then that is a very different way than just slapping someone into the face with, you messed this up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really staying in the awkwardness. It's the ocean that being clear is kind and like being unclear is unkind. So sometimes we say things and we maybe tone it down and we try to say things to make the other one feel better. What we want to do is we make ourselves feel better. We don't want to have this awkward conversation. So we do something to make them feel better because that makes us feel better. Yeah. But in the end, it's unkind to not be clear. And I mean, not be brutal. And this is also like a sentence which I really just love is that she's not a fan of anything brutal, including honesty. Because something is accurate or factual doesn't mean it can't be used in a destructive manner. So people are like, hey, I'm just telling the truth. Doesn't matter. If you tell the truth to hurt someone, it's still something I'm not going to stay behind and respect. But being clear, but not being brutal. I can get behind that.
Yeah, completely. Especially if it's about feedback. I think it's really important to stay in these I messages. I have seen X, Y, Z.
Yes, yeah.
That has the impact for me of X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
I have seen you diving into this presentation without any frame. That has the impact that I was lost.
Yeah. This gives like a really good context.
Yeah. And then stop with the feedback. Don't go on further. Don't say what the other person could have done better or whatever. Just then stay there. Stay in this awkward moment of maybe silence. The other person, if he needs help, then can ask for help. And then you can have a discussion about what you could do differently. But if the other person says, oh, thanks for the feedback. Yeah, I know how to do this better. Done.
I think like enduring the awkward silence is an incredibly important and very powerful communication tool. And this is something you have to learn. I had to learn that to really endure that. But it gives someone else time to think, gather their thoughts, and if you are able to endure the silence a bit longer than the other person, it provokes them to start being also active in the conversation and actually, maybe share something. Why they didn't have time to put it, is there a reason maybe? So it's not like one-sided monologue, but get interactive. So this is really powerful. I learned.
Yeah. What is the top takeaway from the book for you?
Oh, I think there's the two aspects. I think one is for me was having a framework for this kind of like thing which lingers in the back of my mind, like all these years, which I couldn't really word, that this putting yourself out and no matter how the outcome is, that this is courage. That if you meet a courageous person, what does it entail for you? And also I backed up with research for a lot of people, is this like someone who really puts himself out there and it reflects how I feel about having courage. And I think this is like one of the core takeaways for me. And the other ones, which I think is equally important, are all these little tips and frameworks which have shaped really how I'm as a person, like outside of work. Because we deal with shame, we deal with empathy, but vulnerability. These are things which also impact your private life. So actually, shame is one of her main research points. And I said, okay, I never really thought about how does shame happen in my day-to-day life. And these are things which impact maybe my private life even more than my personal, my professional life. Yeah, actually, that's actually one thing about shame I really wanted to also talk about is she mentions that shame is really tied to perfectionism, is something which might occur in a on a work environment where we have to talk about details a lot. And so people may tend to get perfectionism. And she said, yeah, when you have someone who is perfectionist, shame is riding shotgun, she thought, because it's not striving for excellence. Like shame is the feeling that like never good enough. And so she counters that with empathy. What is empathy? And how you can actually get rid of shame in yourself and other people by have empathy towards other people and yourself. And for example, one really powerful concept, talk about empathy misses. And I really recognize myself a lot of that. So we try to be empathic towards other people, but we miss it. And for example, reaction when someone has lost something or something bad happened, someone lost their job and you're going, oh man, that's so bad. I can't believe how you're holding up. It's so bad. It's not making the other person feel better if you really emphasize how bad the situation is. And she has six of these different, and I recognize myself in every one of those. And another one is just saying, oh, you're going to be fine. You're going to manage. It's going to be fine. Oh, I know. Yeah, change topic. And next one is, oh, it's not that bad. Here's the positive things. Here's the upsides of that. And I recognize immediately in that one. And the last one, I mean, that it's more, doesn't happen to me at the time, but saying, oh, you think that's bad? It could be even worse. Let me tell about my neighbor who hit it even worse. I mean, and these are things, but I see people do that all the time if they try to have empathy with someone. And I realize, oh, damn, I don't know how to have empathy, which makes the other person actually feel better.
Yeah.
And so these are things that I didn't expect in a leadership book, but that has really shaped how I interact with people who have had a loss or maybe who have a hard time. And really that was one of the really big takeaways for me, how to work with shame, actually.
That is a very good point. Yeah, I remember these as well. And you see yourself in the past having said exactly all these things. They were not helpful for the other person, just for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes you feel better.
Yeah. Awesome. That is an outstanding summary. If you haven't read the book, check out the links here in the show notes and especially connect with Marius on the next books. What are books that you have potentially on the list that you want to go deeper into for the book club in the future?
Yeah, like I said, we're still open for suggestions. We have a shortlist. Time management is something people have wished for. Very high on the shortlist is the 100-year life. It's also backed up by science, a book which talks about how our personal and professional life would have changed if we all get up to 100 years in age, because that, of course, have to be a fundamental change in our society. And it actually was initiated by a research funded by the Japanese government, because they gonna go directly to the direction of having people eventually 100-year, getting 100-year old. And so this is really interesting. Some book on happiness. We have the Atomic Habits, which is also on the shortlist. So yeah, we got a great list of books. So stay excited. Again, suggestions are always welcome. And yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn or go to the website of PSI Book Club and get on the newsletter so you get immediately informed as soon as the registration starts. And yeah, I'm really happy to see more people join the club.
That is so awesome. And congratulations for initiating this. It's not just that these small groups just get together. Arius has also organized moderators for all of these, and these moderators are kind of get prep material so that all these discussions can be really fruitful. So it's a very well organized course. It's for free for PSI members. And so if you aren't yet a PSI member, join PSI via psiweb.org. There are all the different things. Also, there's this yearly conference of the PSI. If you have never attended, this is an absolute must-have. The conference in London this year in June is nearly booked out, which is outstanding, close to 600 people. And it's another event where you can learn, interact with all kinds of different people that think very much like you. Thanks, Marius, for this awesome discussion, and all the best for continuing with the book club.
Thanks for having me. What a pleasure.
Have you already checked out The Effective Statistician Academy? If not, then head over to theeffectivestatistician.com, click on the Academy button at the top, and learn about all the great resources you can use to boost your career. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS for help with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.